Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, welcome to episode 52 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I am here on a mission to help marketers and founders sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's marketing experts. Today, I had the pleasure of talking to Alina Benny. Now, she said SEO is content and content is SEO. Sounds like another marketing buzzword to throw around. But Alina Benny, Growth Marketing Manager at Nextiva, focus on optimizing content for search intent and user experience that resulted in 107% increase in organic traffic in just 6 months. So in episode 52, you'll learn from Alina three things. First, the exact strategy that Alina used to get that amazing result. Second, whether landing page or blog post is best to rank for keywords in Google, which I thought was interesting. Number three, Alina's playbook for optimizing content for Google and also for readers so that they can rank on specific keywords. Now, please support this podcast. I'm not sure if you know, this podcast is a one-man show. I record, edit, and create all my marketing materials for this podcast. So I made it easy for you. There's three ways to support it. First, tell a friend about it. Share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn. You can go to growthtoday.fm/52. You can find a link in the description of wherever you get your podcast, and I made it super easy for you to share it. Second, join Growth Today Tribe. You'll get the cheat sheet directly emailed to you. I'll also tell you who my next guests are, and you can ask questions to them via email to me, and I will shout you out in that episode. Finally, third, support me on Patreon with as little as $2 per episode for exclusive access such as getting a handwritten note, thank you note from me to you. I will actually write that by hand. Early access to podcasts one day before the release. Access to all the growth cheat sheets. Access to the private Growth Today Tribe Slack group. And you get to listen in to some podcasts when I record it live and more. It goes to raise $200 per episode so I can focus all my energy on finding some more amazing guests and putting together questions from community members like you to ask to those guests. Now, you can go to patreon.com/growthtoday, or you can find it in the link in the description once again. First 20 patrons, I will thank you in every episode for the rest of the year. And with that, I announce this. This week, I have my second patron. I have my first patron, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas. Thank you for being an early adopter. And I also want to thank Veronica from London, UK. I really appreciate you. So grab that now. It's only 18 early adopter package where you get all of the perks for just $2 at a 75% discount. Enough about me. Let's jump in.
Hey, everybody. I have Alina, who is Growth Marketing Manager at Nextiva. How's it going, Alina?
Hey, Emily. Thanks for having me and doing well. Yeah.
That's great. That's great to hear. I'm really excited to talk about stuff that you talked about, particularly when you reached out to me on LinkedIn. You said that Nextiva's organic traffic went up 100% compared to May 2018. I'm really excited to talk about that. But you know, before we talk about that, maybe tell a little bit about yourself, Alina, and not like an interview question, because I'm really more interested in people's career stories, because it's not always linear. That's the thread that I've been like really latching on, is that career is a non-linear path to where you are now. So what's your background and how did you get into growth marketing?
Yeah, for sure. I am an engineer. I did my undergrad in electronics engineering, and that was with the dreams and hopes of becoming an astrophysicist at some point. So growing up, I loved physics and I loved math, and I was one of those, you know, nerds in class, and I was happy to be one of them. And somewhere along, you know, the course of my undergrad is when I figured out that, you know, I just wasn't passionate about you know, the industry that I was going to step into, or I just didn't have the right kind of guidance at that point. And this was, you know, with all good luck, it was in my first year of college. So I had plenty of time to just kind of re-strategize. There was no way that I was going to get out of the course because my parents were as you probably know, Indian parents are extremely strict. They were hell-bent that I needed to finish my course no matter what, and not just finish my course, but kind of be top of class. So while I did that, I wanted to make sure that, you know, I didn't end up working for a large, you know, multinational company that I didn't fit in or needed to do some kind of, just be one among 10,000 employees doing coding. So I started doing freelance work in content. I worked with a bunch of startups in India, got severely underpaid. You wouldn't believe it. I was getting paid about, I don't know, $2 per post at some point in my life. Yeah. And from there, like by the end of the 4 years of undergrad, I had worked with about 5-6 startups and built kind of a good, you know, rep in the local Indian startup scene. And I was determined to get into Freshworks. Back then, it was known as Freshdesk. And yeah, I got in there. That was my first job. I joined in the brand marketing team, and it was a fantastic ride, the 2 years there. And I figured out that, you know, the funny thing is I moved from being a content specialist inside the brand team to a content person on the product marketing team to then being fully inside of product marketing. And the twist really is that I wanted to expand to working with more global teams and just kind of wanted to build my tea in terms of skills, because I'm a big believer that, you know, I don't want to be a generalist so early in my career. So I decided to reach out to like, I don't know, easily 30 to 50 companies in the United States. Got turned down by almost all of them because they wouldn't support, you know, people without a work visa or like had issues with people working remotely and stuff like that. So it was during my job hunt phase, it was actually extremely strenuous to me because I was just trying to figure out what I was missing. And it was at that point that, you know, there was this light at the end of the tunnel, Sales Hacker happened. And coincidentally, they were hiring their first time or first ever full-time content marketing manager. And I read the job description and my jaw dropped because 90% of it was stuff that I had done before or I knew I could do. And the rest of the 10% was just getting started on SEO. And I hit G up, Gaetano. And you know from, you know, speaking with him and seeing him on LinkedIn, he is a straight shooter, zero bullshit. Yeah, and it was just fantastic. You know, Max is phenomenal. He is so driven. In fact, my little team, the five of us at Sales Hacker at that point, going from a 1,000-member company at Freshworks to a 5-member team was just a phenomenal sort of a trajectory for me. Because everything changes, right? Like you don't have a big budget. You don't have, you know, corporate goals. You don't have, because we were all working remotely, we didn't have like a dress code or like a time to get to work or like pretend to work or anything like that. So until our acquisition, it was a fantastic ride. And I don't know if you know or if Gaetano even mentioned this, but when the acquisition came around, that's when I found out that Gaetano was going to pursue another opportunity. And my heart broke because he was literally the best boss I've ever worked with. And I, you know, we were talking this one night when I learned about the acquisition. I told him, listen, I'm going whatever you're going because I just need to. and he was like, yeah, okay, sure, fantastic, you know. And then Nextiva happened. Again, Yaniv, our CMO, is just an amazing, amazing person. The entire team at Nextiva, really. I'm one of their very few employees who work almost 100% remote. And, you know, I make trips every quarter just to visit the team and make sure we get the FaceTime. That's very important. That's how I got here. Long road.
Yeah, it's definitely wrong. It's nice that you stayed with Gaetano. That speaks a lot to his leadership skills. And the other thing that you said that I really want to latch on to is that you said you didn't want to specialize, you don't want to be a journalist. And I'm not sure if you know Kevin Indig just wrote a blog post about how every marketer should start as a specialist first and go to a journalist. I'm going to link that on the show notes here somewhere, but that's really cool. Yeah. I'm curious what your parents think about you going from an astrophysicist to now becoming a growth marketer, because I'm not sure if you know this. I actually started my undergrad degree in physics. So I wanted to be a physicist, and then I realized I wasn't smart enough to take the courses because I almost failed nonlinear mathematics or something like that, and I switch over to business and computer science. Curious what your parents think about what you do now, or you're like, does it matter?
Yeah. Before that, let me just tell you a fun fact. Remember how I told you I was an absolute nerd in school? So everybody would just look at me and be like, yeah, she's, even if she doesn't study, she's going to get, whatever the top scores in class anyway. And me into my second year of college, I was just so disenchanted. I actually failed for one of the easiest subjects ever. And that was like the lowest point in my life. And I had to break this news to my parents. The overachiever that I was or was perceived to be my entire life. So 19 years of like being top out of the class, and I had to break it to my mom and dad saying, hey, by the way, I totally tanked that test and I have to retake it. It was not a good conversation, but at the end of the day, my parents are amazing. The reason that I'm here, or wherever I am, I'm not saying I've reached anywhere significant in my life, but I'm happy where I am right now, and they have a huge deal to do with that. All they said was, just make sure that you have a plan, and you're going to be happy with it. And they were especially convinced when I started making money off my freelance gigs, and I stopped asking for money from home. They're like, oh, okay, seems like a lucrative deal. Go ahead. So that was kind of the tipping point. Yeah.
That's cool. I want to ask you maybe later down this podcast about where you want to end up after. But let's talk about SEO. And that's something that you have been focusing on lately. Now, this is something that I asked Kevin, and I like asking this to people who focus on SEO, because a lot of folks outside of SEO thinks that SEO is dead. In 2019, Google has been doing some really crazy stuff lately. They have been promoting their own content and their own websites compared to other sites. What do you say to people who say, hey, SEO is worthless, we shouldn't be doing that, it's dead in 2019?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm not going to try and compete with any of the expert opinions out there, but I'm going to give you this answer in probably two ways. Number one being, Freshworks is an amazing company, and the biggest, I think, sort of hurdle, they've obviously overcome that at this point, but as they were ramping up a few years ago, a huge gap was SEO, and I was there when the team, or when we had like, I think easily about 50 to 60 content writers who are not focused on SEO. So there was just like an enormous amount of content going out. At a VC-backed company where, the market is extremely competitive, and we were just not hitting the same levels as the other companies in the market, for example, a HubSpot or a Zendesk or a Salesforce. And the common factor, and I'm not saying all of these companies have their SEO game down, but if there was a point when the others beat Freshworks, it was because their content was significantly better. To me, when I chatted with a couple of folks from HubSpot, and they were just the numbers blew my mind. They would say they get 50,000 top of the funnel leads just from their blog every month. And this is data from like 2-3 years ago. I'm sure it's much, much more right now. So why in the world would you give up on something like that? So that's I think part one of my realization, that being on the other side of the fence, where I didn't think SEO could make a dent because that wasn't part of the culture at a previous company that I was at, and being on this side of the fence with Sales Hacker and Nextiva, one common thing is we all know is that ad spends are just like going through the roof. It is not sustainable. Customer acquisition cost is going up, and lifetime value is just going down. So SEO really is kind of that. For as long as it's going to be, it's that kind of stopgap measure to make sure that you're not spending insane amounts of money on ads. So obviously, we're seeing a dip in like Facebook returns, Facebook ad returns. We're seeing not a lot of, I think at some point, or even at Nextiva, I don't think we invest anything at all on Twitter ads. LinkedIn is kind of iffy. We see some amount of results based on, if we have like a fantastic ebook going on, yeah, those get results, but it's not kind of I don't think we can bank on it saying, yeah, this is going to be a steady source of leads for us. But what's constantly gone up, and that's what I hit you up with as well, is from, if you look at the chart from like March 2018 to March 2019, the one thing that has steadily gone up is organic traffic. And this is important for us because this means we don't have to put as much money into those keywords that we were targeting with Google Ads because we're getting traffic organically for the same keywords. And this also means that we can focus on like more difficult keywords, or like we can get that extra traffic to some pages that need to get bumped up with our Google Ads, for example. So I know what it's like to be on the outside and think, yeah, we don't need SEO because product is great, brand is fantastic, we have all the VC money in the world. There are companies doing fantastic with just brand. But when you're on the other side where you know SEO is working for you, you're getting a tremendous amount of traffic, you just cannot afford to spend millions on ads, then you start seeing return on, you know, SEO.
That's so true. I think that's the way I look at it is ads tend to be more short-term goals or short-term thinking, and then SEO would be more a little bit long-term. I saw one of your presentations at Product Led Summit, and it's kind of related to this, that SEO, when people who are not in marketing or maybe earlier on in the career, that when you think about SEO, they think of it just as one role. But in that Product Led Summit presentation that you did, you said that product marketing, PR, and content marketing have to be working together for SEO for it to really work. Can you talk a little bit more about that presentation that you did for the Product Led Summit?
Yeah, for sure. This again is again based on like actual experience I've had with, you know, the companies I've worked with. And the example I'm going to give you is based on a rebrand. So anytime a company decides to rebrand and, you know, the SEO team is not involved and it's mostly driven by creative or like your content writing team or something, or just like directions top down from the management, I can guarantee you that it's going to be fantastic up until the rollout date because everybody's excited about the new design. Everybody's excited about the new messaging and the brand and the tone and the colors and just kind of like the funky new icons and just how clean everything is. But a month into rolling something out like that and you realize, okay, why isn't my traffic as good as before? Why are we losing, you know, traffic on money keywords? Why is, you know, why are all of our competitors taking over pages that we used to dominate before? So this is why I say that you need to really think about it in the other way around. You know, great, yeah, let's do a rebrand or like let's change up something on the website. But first, can we all just sit down and put creative as well as SEO as well as the messaging together to figure out what the best next step is going forward? So that's kind of what I covered in that entire presentation at Product Led Summit. Even with PR, for example, what a lot of companies do at this point is just kind of hit up PR Newswire. You've got all these credits there. You publish this press release that nobody, not even your own team, is going to read. It's so template-ish. You do like about 86 of them every year for every single feature you ever launch. But then if you were to for a moment stop and say, okay, you know what? Let's just plan this out. Let's not overdo this. There's so many different growth channels that we could integrate SEO with and roll this out. It could be, you know, as simple as maybe you're launching a, I don't know, let me give you an example from Nextiva. Maybe you're launching a new insurance CRM feature. If you were to go the traditional route and not, you know, not think about SEO until the very end, where you're like, okay, I'm not getting any results, so let's talk to the SEO team. But if you were to do the other thing, where you get SEO on board right from the beginning, what you might think about doing is creating a landing page, you know, just thinking about the different related keywords or like the different, you know, what people are actually searching for when they look for insurance CRM, what the related long-term or like long-tail keywords are. Do you want to create an ebook as a sort of lead collection source? And then you just kind of build up that page like that, targeting that, and then you put in ad, you create blogs about, you distribute that content across like related blogs, you meet up on, then you create a press, and then not too much about it because it is, you know, you probably know all these press release websites don't give you do follow links anymore. So it's just, to me, it seems almost a waste of time to be even worried about those press releases. So yeah, that's what I'm saying. It can all just be such a cohesive process when you think about it from SEO first and then, you know, roll out the rest of it. instead of undoing a whole bunch of things you did.
Yeah, that's so true. You have to look at it holistically. Like, it's all about trying to think about the user experience once people do get on the site. And that's what I want to talk about next, is particularly how you and your team at Nextiva was able to increase the traffic from May 2018 to 2019 by 1,000%. First of all, congrats. What was the main things that your team did to actually achieve that? Like, any particular key insights and actions that you did?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I worked in the weeds, especially the blog-related initiatives that we were doing. And even with our landing pages, I think the one thing that we always go back to, which is an absolutely mandatory, you know, line item for us right now, is search intent. We don't simply chase a keyword just because a competitor is ranking for it, or just because there's a lot of traffic, or it's low keyword difficulty. For us, it's trying to figure out what exactly Google is serving for a specific keyword, and then figuring out, okay, should we create just maybe a glossary for this? Should we create a transactional landing page for this? Should we create an informational blog post for this? So the initial first couple of months, we were looking at all of our current content, deciding which should update and refresh, and which of it we should just entirely kill because it was kind of cannibalizing, or like it wasn't even ranking at all because the intent was way off. You know, it was just trying to, it was like trying to rank a business phone service with an article. That's almost impossible at this point because the SERP is full of, you know, directories listing business phone service or actually websites that have extremely high domain authority. So that was the first step of how we did it. It was just kind of an introspection into how content needed to go next. And the next step was definitely into the refreshes, this laser sharp focus on search intent. And we started building out, was a game changer for us. Love that tool. We use it every single day. In fact, we use it, I don't know, are you familiar with it, Emily? It's been absolutely fantastic to kind of use that, just not just for our landing pages, but also for all of our blogs. And we've had a tremendous focus on readability, just to kind of make sure that we're not serving anything too complicated, that everything is nice and easy to read. It's structured in a better way. And that, so, you know, we pay so much attention to that. And every single piece that goes out on the Nextiva blog or any web entity that we have, a landing page or anything at all, goes through all of these different stages of readability tests, obviously grammar tests, making sure that we cover these different entities that match user intent. And then finally, of course, the entire user experience of the whole thing, you know, are we making it easy for somebody to consume the type of content they want? If it is a transactional page, are we making it easy for them to find the CTA? Are we showing them exactly what they want to read in terms of, like, when they do a quick skim, are we showing them the different features that they want to see, or are they looking for the video here? So there's just a lot of testing involved. And then the nicest part about SEO, which I observed at Sales Hacker and eventually at Nextiva, is that once you get all your basics right, including, you know, doing all your technical SEO fixes, all the redirect chains fixed, and all the caching and the site speed stuff done, and you work on your on-page elements, you will start seeing it's kind of like a self-creating system, because Google now understands that you have authority in XYZ topics. Like in Nextiva's case, to give you an example, we have good authority in customer experience data keywords, or customer service keywords, and obviously VoIP and VoIP-related keywords, but we didn't have this kind of authority on customer service maybe about 4 to 5 months ago. So at that point, we set out to rank, again, to give an example, to rank for customer service tips. It was such a ginormous task in front of us because we didn't have a lot of high quality content on the website in that, you know, domain of content. And over a period of time, obviously the number one thing that we did was to do good research about what kind of content is already out there. So we built an extremely, extremely comprehensive outline for our writers, and our backlink strategy too, which is interesting because we don't just go all out and try and grab as many backlinks as possible, especially with the new articles that come out. We let it rest for about 2-3 months to see how they pick up backlinks organically. And then if they need that extra push, we do outreach on top of that. Again, only from websites that have relevant content on them. And then if you look at SERP right now, we're bouncing back between position one, position two for customer service tips. So this has kind of been the case. Both at Sales Hacker and at Nextiva is that once you have your SEO engine set, it's so much easier to add new topics of authority to your website and start ranking for them. And obviously the game is refreshing and updating. It never stops. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for going through that whole process in a very thorough way. I'm going to ask a few questions about that. First of all, in terms of search intent, do you do any particular research into how to figure out the search intent for specific keywords? Do you just actually Google the terms and then like, oh, here's the results from this, and then based on that, this is the actual search intent of that keyword?
Yeah, I mean, like the foolproof way would definitely be to go through every single result on SERP. What I do is I do a quick skim to see their headlines. It's very easy to see if they're a directory listing or if they're a product page or if they're a blog. These are the three main categories of, you know, or the pages that I see in my industry especially. And then what we, you know, this is where tools like Ahrefs or your Clearscope is going to help, because you will see rated keywords, you will see rated questions, you will see the people also ask box, and you'll see the other, you know, Google features like the rich snippet or the featured snippet. So you get so many ideas from these, because especially with like the how-to schema very popular right now, Google's getting a lot of those, you know, no-click answers already. So we try to generally steer away from those topics because we don't want zero clicks on our articles. So anytime we even prioritize content, we need to go through every single link and try to see, okay, just kind of gauge what users want and what Google is going to.
That's interesting. You said that you avoid keywords that Google just shows the answer without any clicks. Has that worked out for your team?
Yeah, for sure. So what I meant is like we definitely stay away from some of those very basic questions. It's, again, super high difficulty most of the time, by the way. And a good example is probably what is VoIP. This is something that I think we were on page one a long time ago, and then now we recently refreshed our content just because we already had invested a ton of time into creating that blog. And if you look at it, that's the kind of, nobody really wants to go deeper into that. Most people are just looking for the full form. What we try to do is when we create our keyword strategy, we try to go for a more sophisticated approach to keywords. So try and focus on keywords that you just can't get the featured snippet to give you the answer. So yeah.
Do you categorize the keywords by particular search intent categories? Like whether this is more like, oh, this is more top of the funnel, bottom of the funnel, or this one is like they're trying to find a how-to, and then another one is trying to figure out more of like a step-by-step instruction. Like how do you categorize your search intent when you're doing that research?
I think both are important. To give you an example, recently we were working on an article or refreshing an article called How to Fax Online. The old copy talked a lot about what is fax or what is VFax, what are the different types of faxing, etc. When the actual intent for that is literally 6 or 7 steps to fax online. So it's very important for you to, when you're serving content, especially after your featured image or whatever, in the first 300 words, because people are not going to read all the way through. It's very obvious by now. And, you know, your heat maps will, you know, give you data about it. I don't think I've ever seen an article where it's not been really cold by the end of the page, especially because, you know, you probably know like the average length of an article is about 2000 words now, which is crazy. So for any of these how-to articles, it's important that you have those jump links right in the beginning saying, yeah, these are the XYZ steps. And you talk about a little bit of description in the beginning. So in terms of categorization, yeah, we look at both. We definitely like to know whether it's going to be a landing page versus a blog. And further, we'd like to see, okay, is this going to be, because the way we would write an article on how to fax online is extremely difficult. I mean, different from the way we would write an article on, say, a customer service strategy.
I want to jump on what you just said. How do you figure out whether it should be a landing page or a blog? Is there a particular search intent that was like, oh, this is going to be a landing page, or this other search intent is probably just going to be a blog, like the 7 steps of faxing?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you don't have a lot of time on your hand, the easiest way would be to just, you know, hop into a Clearscope and look at the different search results that come there. They have a nifty little annotation that says, okay, X% of SERP is actually articles or landing pages.
Oh.
So yeah, which is pretty cool.
What is that called? Scope?
ClearScope.
ClearScope, yeah. Interesting.
But if you do have some amount of time for research, we easily spend, I don't know, a couple of hours or more, especially when we're working on money keywords, to figure out what the best way to serve content for that is. So I definitely like going through every result on SERP, or maybe even on the second page, to figure out, you know, if product pages are ranking, why are they ranking? If at all there is a lonely blog in there, why are they ranking? So if there are these exceptions, it's mostly you can attribute that to a very high domain authority. But we always tend to, the best way to go is to see, okay, if 7 out of 10 are a particular type of page, then it's a good cue for you to create your page based on that.
Have you ever looked at a specific set of keywords and the first sets are videos? And I know Gaetano is like super big on videos right now.
Yeah.
Is that something that you also are thinking about when you're trying to rank for keywords, would be like, hey, let's do videos instead of a landing page or a blog?
Yes, for sure. I think you know everybody's probably realizing that in 2019 right now, that you just cannot stop with your SEO on your landing pages and blogs. You definitely need to diversify. Video is a huge part of it. Just being on Instagram, just serving different types of content is extremely important. Where it gets tricky is when you're in unsexy category or like industry like VoIP. Because your buyers are not going to be in all those sexy places, if you know what I mean. And so, but yeah, you know, video is a huge part of it. We've launched our webinar series just a couple of months ago. It's getting some decent traction. We're ramping it up really soon. We're looking at different avenues to serve content, you know, like maybe a podcast really soon, or, you know, just kind of how-to videos on a lot of things within our domain. So yeah, 100%. We've seen a lot of traffic come in from LinkedIn as well. Again, Gaetano is huge on videos, especially like informational videos, as well as some of the witty ones that he puts out. So there's no denying that has a huge future.
I want to talk about user experience now. And one thing that you said earlier is you want to make it easy for folks to read and find a CTA. Is there any particular like rule of thumb that you use to make sure that things are readable and it's easy to find the call to action?
It may seem obvious to a lot of people who that this comes too easily, but I'm still shocked by the number of websites, especially these directories that have a lot of real estate on SERP. I'm not going to name any because they're in the industry and we respect all of them. But have you ever seen, like I still do, like these 300 word paragraphs that you just cannot skim through? Or
it's very hard to read.
Yeah, just like no images, no idea where to focus on, no overview for an article, no related articles mentioned in between, no inline CTAs. So these seem like obvious things for a lot of the sophisticated websites out there, but there is still a huge chunk of websites today that don't focus on this and are probably losing traffic, you know. Affiliate marketing, yes, great. Ad spend, great. But once you get visitors onto your website, there is nothing that can make them stay except user experience. It's up to you to figure out with your layout and structure and, you know, how you, you know, lay out your content to improve the time on page, to decrease poker sticking and things like that. Because everything else, yeah, great. SEO works, but once you come onto the page, it's a good mix of SEO as well as just kind of a common sense on like what you would do on that page if you were to land on.
I think the problem is we kind of adopt what we learned in high school. So one time I wrote an essay and I had one paragraph where it was just one or two sentences. And my teacher was like, you should make this paragraph longer. And what I'm finding with a lot of blogs that are easy to read are their paragraphs are essentially just one or two sentences, which your English teacher would tell you that that's totally incorrect.
And there are others, you know, you can get really scientific with it as well. You know, like with Google's NLP tool, you can figure out what kind of sentiment ranks better. Like if you look at the top 5 articles and you see, okay, this particular article is more positive than the one that's not ranking, or they're talking about these specific entities more than like a different article. So you can get really scientific with it and then figure out how to do your, you know, lay out your structure based off of that as well, which I think is really important today because content is getting super fiercely competitive, and the kind of companies that are overtaking you in your content game are actually investing in it really, really well.
The other thing that you mentioned in that process to get 1,000 increase in terms of organic traffic is that you talked about backlink strategy, that you let it rest for 2 to 3 months organically and then do outreach if you feel like, this is going to do well. How do you decide which articles you should do outreach on and which ones don't? Do you just look at the number of total users or page views on that page and see, we should get more backlinks on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been like an ongoing trend for us over the last, especially 6 months, where we've seen, we don't see our articles on like anywhere on the first 5 pages for the longest time. And then one fine day, it's on page one. And we're like, okay, that's great. And we wouldn't have probably done a lot of forceful outreach for it. And over time, what we realized is that you need to get Google time to figure out, okay, just kind of index your content, crawl it, just let them feel it out too, before you go all out and like email your 110 list of buddies who are going to give you a backlink. That is not necessary today, because even if you look at just like the backlink stats for some of the articles that are ranking on Google, there are plenty of articles that don't have don't have as many backlinks as if you compare maybe rank one versus rank 10. I've seen so many examples where rank one has probably 5 backlinks and the one that's ranking 10 has 200 backlinks. So it's very iffy. So you don't need to stress out about backlinks as much as you used to maybe like 5 years ago, because that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, because now Google's like really getting smarter, and you talk about the NLP. Like Google's really trying to figure out which one is the best answer to this query. And people can, like you said, people can game getting backlinks. Is there any particular process you use to do the outreach? Let's say you do identify one article that suddenly popped up on the first page and like, okay, let's push this hard. Let's try to get more links. Do you just reach out to your list of, like you said, 110 buddies that will link back to you? Or do you like have a more targeted approach?
I'd say, it doesn't work anymore when you have that kind of an automated outreach setup, if at all anybody is doing that, because everybody can see right through it. And I mean, everybody equals Google here. So that's why there's less pressure to just go all out and email like 1,000 people about giving you backlinks. The pressure where it actually is to create quality content. And that's when it actually reaps extremely high quality backlinks. And G's always saying this, and Yenny is always saying this, street cred is what matters most. It's not how large your outreach list is. So if you have good street cred, if you're consistently pushing out quality content, if you have good graphics, if your layout is top notch, like I said, if people are actually staying on a piece of content and not over sticking out, those are all good indications of why somebody might want to link back. And I cannot even emphasize enough when you have original graphics. It's just little charts or graphs that are going to give you those extra image backlinks, right? Like source links or like attributions, which I think are fantastic ways to get backlinks.
I want to talk about something you said, that you have a playbook for optimizing content. What is that process that you do to optimize content?
Yeah, so I think, I cannot stress this enough, and I haven't personally met a lot of people who do this right now. But I do, I'd say 70% of my work on any piece of content before it's even written. And I'm talking about the outlines. So I manage a bunch of writers, and sometimes I write myself. But where I spend a lot of energy is just creating that outline. And my content outlines, like, I swear by them. They're pretty airtight. And in most cases, throughout this, it's almost been a year since I started working at Nextiva. I can guarantee you, and I'm trying not to sound overconfident here, but it's been a great formula that we've kind of organically figured out, that if you spend like all these factors I mentioned before, right, you need to look at search intent, which is primary. So you're just kind of figuring out what type of page you should serve, what your target keyword should be, and if it is too competitive, what related long tail keyword you can go for. I put in like you know, suggested headlines. I look at all the different, for inspiration, I go into like Wired or AOL and try to see how I can not be boring like the rest of the voice related blogs out there and just kind of stand out. I pull in related keywords from Ahrefs and SEMrush and ClearScope into this outline that I'm creating. I talk about, you know, what kind of CTAs we should have and where. I actually lay out an actual structure based on the different articles that are ranking on Google or like the landing pages that are ranking on Google. A very important part of this outline is also the people also ask box. So like I said, I don't know anybody who spends like 2-3 hours creating outlines. Most people I know would just yell a keyword at a writer and say, okay, 3,000 words, this is your focus keyword. Write an article. And the biggest mistake with that is that you get this 3,000 words back and there's just no way you can edit it without saying, okay, you know, this is not what I wanted. And the same thing goes with design as well. I've heard so many designers complain about this, saying they don't get enough instruction in the beginning. And then finally, when it comes back, it's like, I'm not feeling it, or this is not what I wanted, you know? So yeah, I swear by it. Like my playbook are my outlines, and I'm extremely proud of the structure I have for it. And yeah, that's my gold egg laying goose.
Have you written it somewhere like a blog or an ebook that people can download it anywhere online, or is it still in your head and you're going to put it down on paper at some point?
At this point, it's definitely a competitive advantage, if you know
okay,
what I mean.
Okay, all right. So this is like a secret sauce.
Yep. But, you know, I'm all for sharing. This is probably going to come out in a blog real soon. I'm working on a couple of guest posts, which is around search intent. So yeah, I'll shoot you a link once it's out.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to send that out and post it on this blog post. I think you're completely right. It's something that I've been hearing over and over again. It's like a search intent and making sure that your user experience once they're on the site is actually really great. I want to shift gears and talk about your advice for any marketers or founder about growth or SEO.
From being like an individual contributor on a growth team, I've heard this throughout the industry and like with other teams I've worked with. It's very important for a growth team to focus on their own projects versus like say integrated marketing projects that come up. A lot of times, there's a lot of decisions top down that come saying, okay, we need to do this right now, or like focus on this right now. But any good demand generation manager, and like Gaetano is an absolute expert on this. He knows how to juggle, you know, our personal OKRs versus these integrated marketing requests that we get from different teams. And any successful growth team does a 50-50 of both. And I absolutely love that I'm in a space like that right now, and our team respects that. I don't see this a lot in, you know, the other companies that I've chatted with or have had close, you know, interactions with. So that's my advice to like management or like founders looking to build out a growth team. It needs to be a 50-50. As for marketers, I obviously cannot advise anybody that, you know, I could probably give some sort of direction to people just starting up in marketing. Without copywriting, I wouldn't be here. And to me, that is still the number one skill that any marketer should pick up, is that if you can write copy, you will always fall on your feet. And the second thing is just try to understand how search intent works. Search intent is money. I think it's an actual skill at this point to understand how search intent works. Yes, all the tools are going to give you all kinds of data, but what you do with it is an actual skill. So copywriting and search intent, yeah. I cannot even emphasize enough.
Yeah, that's true. I'm actually trying to improve my copywriting, and I completely agree, because marketing is just a communication activity. Like you're communicating value, you're communicating intent. And I guess that's one of my goals this year, is to improve my copywriting. Is there any particular resource that exercises that you've been doing to improve your copy, or do you just look at other great copywriters and see what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think over the years, I have actually my secret stash of like websites or go-to writers that I stylistically steal from. For the longest time, it used to be Fast Company. I used to be in love with their headlines. And this may sound kind of cliche, but you just have to keep it simple. The best marketers that I know don't complicate things.
Yeah.
Are extremely straightforward with the way they communicate. And they know how to communicate across channels. You know, I'm talking about personal marketing on LinkedIn or Twitter, and then their own blog, Website copy that they work on, everything, you know, just keep it simple and short. And there is no substitute for knowing your industry in and out. That way you don't need to bullshit, you know.
Just as a final thing, where can people find you online? Like, who are you and where can people find Nextiva if they want to know more a little bit about VoIP or anything else?
Yeah, so just like me, Nextiva and I are both on LinkedIn. That's like the easiest way to get in touch with me. We post a ton of content, you know, from our company page on LinkedIn. Nextiva and I are, again, very active on Twitter. So you can hit us both up there. Yeah. And those are the two best places to get in touch. And we also recently did a website revamp. So go check out the website. Pretty cool.
Awesome. I really appreciate your time. I know it's way past midnight there where you're at, right?
No worries. Thank you so much for having me, Rami. This has been so much fun.
Thank you for listening and all the way until the end. This is the last episode of July, and this ends the experiment of publishing 2 episodes a month. Last week, I couldn't publish 2 episodes. Unfortunately, I was moving, and this week, I'm actually on vacation recording this all the way in Virginia. So I will actually be announcing my guest for August tomorrow. So if you don't already follow me, follow me on Twitter at RamiJohn, and you can add me on LinkedIn, just RamiJohn. You can search for it. And I will post up usually any new episodes that I have. And I also tell my followers who my next guest will be so you can get excited about who's coming on this podcast. Like I said, please support this podcast. This is once again a one-man show. I record, edit, and create all the marketing materials. There's 3 ways you can do this. First, tell a friend. Share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn. Second, join the Grow Today tribe. You'll get a cheat sheet directly emailed to you. And I'll also tell you who my next guests are so you can ask them questions via email and I'll shout you out. You can do that at growtoday.fm/52. And third, support me on Patreon. For as little as $2 a day, you get some amazing exclusive access perks like getting a handwritten note, thank you note from me and stickers from Growth Marketing Today, early access to podcasts before it's released, access to all the growth cheat sheets, access to the private Growth Today tribe. You can listen in to some podcasts live while I record it with the guests. And my goal is to raise $200 per episode so I can focus all my energy on finding more amazing guests and putting together some smart questions to them and producing more content, more quality content to help marketers and founders like you. You go to patreon.com/growtoday to do that. And with that, I just want to thank once again my early patrons, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas and Veronica from London. And other than that, everybody, as always, keep on growing.